Welcome to the Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we will be studying Yirmiyahu Parak Aleph, Chapter 1. The Gemara in Baba Batra, 14b, separates various prophets into categories. Yeshayahu, Isaiah, is considered a prophet of complete consolation. Yechezkel, Ezekiel, is categorized as a prophet that begins with desolation, with Korban, and ends in consolation. And Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, who we are studying, is considered a prophet that is completely involved in desolation, in Chorban. This makes sense, because Yirmiyahu is the prophet who foretold the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, which happened during his time. In fact, Parak Aleph, chapter 1, starts off with a description of Yirmiyahu's background and tells us that he was a prophet for three different kings, Yoshiyahu, Yehoyakim, and Tzidkiyahu, and then continues in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, to say, Ad Galut Yerushalayim b'chodesh ha-chamishi, until the exile of Jerusalem in the fifth month, the month of Av. How jarring is this introduction? Within the first three verses of the book, we know that Yirmiyahu will be the prophet of the Chorban, and that he will not be successful in saving the Beit HaMikdash from destruction, nor the people of Judah from exile. This sets Yirmiyahu apart from the previous book, Yeshayahu. Sefer Yeshayahu ended with the reign of King Chizkiyahu, who according to Chazal could have been Mashiach. While Chizkiyahu certainly made some mistakes, and while the people of Yehuda certainly have societal ills they need to fix, there's an upward movement in the people and their king. Yeshayahu exits the scene with a king who basically follows his instructions and brings the people closer to God. Yirmiyahu, on the other hand, will start his prophecy in the time of Yoshiyahu, and that will end up being the highlight of his time period. Instead of building up towards his best king, the king and the people will experience a series of devastations until the final exile of the nation in the 11th year Tzidkiyahu. Hence, Yirmiyahu's entire life will be involved in destruction. The concepts of rebuke and consolation, Tochacha and Nechama in Tanakh, however, are not static and are actually counterintuitive. Rebuke is generally thought of as a negative way for a prophet to interact with the people, and consolation as positive. The truth is, however, that it is the reverse. Prophets give rebuke when there is room to change and grow, similar to a doctor prescribing a harsh round of medication that may be uncomfortable but may ultimately save the patient. Consolation, nechama, on the other hand, comes when hope is drained and the person must move on to the next stage of life. The idea that Yirmiyahu is kulo tochacha, only rebuke, alerts us to the incredible potential of this time period and the ability that Yirmiyahu had to save not only the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, but to save the people from themselves. Additionally, the Gemara tells us that all prophecies found in Tanakh were carefully selected from among a corpus of over a million potential prophecies, using the criteria of nevuah shehu tzricha l'dorot, prophecies that are relevant to later generations. Every year, when the cycle of our year alights on the months of Tammuz and Av, we revisit the ills of the generation that destroyed the temple and wonder if our society today is really any different. Yirmiyahu's words have a timeless quality that, far from being depressing, alert us to the best that we can uncover in ourselves. With that, let's jump into the Perek. Perek Aleph is Yirmiyahu's Nevuat Hakdasha, his initiation scene. God appears to Yirmiyahu and tells him in Pasuk 5, "Beterem etzorcha babetin yedaticha, ubeterem teitze merechem hikdashticha, navi legoyim netaticha. Before you were even conceived in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you as a prophet for the nations." Yirmiyahu's response is far from excited. "Aha!" he gasps in horror in verse 6. "Hinei lo yadati daber, ki nara nochi, behold, I do not know how to speak, for I am but a child." God responds to Yirmiyahu that he must do this mission, and that God himself will help him and protect him. God then reaches out his hand, remember this is happening within a prophecy, touches Yirmiyahu on the lips and says in verse 9, "Hinei natati devarai b'ficha, behold, I have put the words in your mouth," thereby answering Yirmiyahu's most pressing problem, that he can't speak. God is saying to him in this prophecy, "You are the one I have chosen for this role, and you are the one I want. I recognize that you do not feel worthy and do not think you will be successful. I realize that you are young and you will be confronting a people who will not want to hear your criticisms. You think you do not have the oratory skills to accomplish this task. I am telling you that despite all this, being a prophet is your destiny. You were literally born for it, and I will help you." You may recognize some similar features in the scene from the initiations of Moshe or Yeshayahu, the reluctant prophet, the focus on the mouth, and the prophet's inability to speak and convey God's message. The repetition of the Shorash Daber, the root word speak, in this passage is noteworthy and is a Milah HaMancha, or a leitmotif, of this passage. The reluctance to lead and focus on speech is not arbitrary. The task that is set out to the prophet is to convey the image shown to him or her by God into language that will both inspire and move the people, often alerting them to their misdeeds. The prophet, in essence, is a bridge between the infinite and the finite, the world of God and the world of humanity. It is no wonder, then, that Yirmiyahu and Moshe reject their callings. Neither feels equipped for this monumental task. In Yirmiyahu's case, he feels that the fate of the nation rests on his ability to speak and convince them to change, and he just does not possess the language to be able to do it. After God touches Yirmiyahu's lips, he then outlines Yirmiyahu's role and says to him in verse 10, Re'e hivkaraticha hayom hazeh al hagoyim ba'al hamamlachot, lintosh lintotz, lahavid laharos, lifnot velintoah. Behold, I have appointed you on the nations and on the people to uproot and pull down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant. Enigmatic phraseology that has four negative words of destruction and two positive words of building. The destruction is clear. Yirmiyahu will rebuke the nation and push them to their limits. It is the building that is unclear. When and in what way will this happen? Simultaneously to the destruction after the discussion? Is it a rebuilding after all is lost? The reader and Yirmiyahu himself are in the dark about this for now. A central question must be addressed at this point. Why would Hashem choose Yirmiyahu? His reservations seem to be valid. He is young with no background and is going to have a hard time convincing a people set in their ways, as well as an established leadership. Additionally, his statement, Aha, Hashem, behold, I cannot speak for I am young, is an example of very lowly speech, especially when compared to the lyrical verses spoken by Yeshayahu a generation earlier. No, he seems to have the correct assessment of his abilities. Why then does God choose him? I'd like to present two approaches to answer this question. One is that while Yirmiyahu is not a natural orator, he has other qualities that make him fit to be the prophet, qualities that he may undervalue, but that God does not. He is pure in a generation that, while sophisticated, has lost their moral compass. Yirmiyahu is an outsider, not part of the leadership, but the leadership itself is corrupted, and he can recognize their flaws. He also possesses an intense spirituality that allows him to connect to God and God's world. In a sense, Yirmiyahu is a microcosm of his own prophecy. He is lowly and rejected, but loved by God. God will help Yirmiyahu speak, just like he will accept the tshuva of Bnei Israel if they desire to do it. He does not want his job, just like they don't want to change, but he must do it nevertheless, just as they must do tshuva. A second approach recognizes that Yirmiyahu is in fact a poor orator, but that is part of the reason that Hashem chose him. Working off the Abarbanel's interpretation of Moshe's chosenness, Moshe who had the same issue, Hashem wants a leader who will not convince the people to return to him because of sheer force of the leader's personality or strong language. The only type of tshuva that Hashem desires is one that is sincere and comes because the people themselves want it, not because they were convinced by a dynamic orator. This approach will inform our learning throughout the Sefer, as Yirmiyahu must struggle not only to convince the people to change their ways, but to teach them in such a way that they realize deep down that they strongly desire to come close to God. Yirmiyahu's initiation scene continues, with Hashem showing Yirmiyahu two images. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Hashem asks Yirmiyahu, "What do you see?" Yirmiyahu responds, "I see an olive branch." Hashem says, "You've seen well, because I will bring about my words to do them." A play on the word almond, shaked, to bring about. Hashem then shows Yirmiyahu a boiling pot, with the steam or the bubbles, as the Mefarshim explain, facing the north. God explains his prophecy as well. The people of the north will come and they will destroy Bnei Israel. These images represent Yirmiyahu's upcoming job. Rashi explains that the almond branch was chosen because it is the fruit that flowers first and alerts Yirmiyahu to the speed that is necessary for him to start his prophecy. The destruction is coming soon. The pot represents the siege that will overtake Jerusalem, an image which is subsequently spelled out in a prophecy in Yechezkel, and the way that Jerusalem will ultimately be punished. Like the blossoming almonds, bubbles too represent quickness and give Yirmiyahu the sense that he must move fast and not hesitate. Hence, the almond branch is the when, and the boiling pot is the how. Another way to look at the signs is that they represent the two parts, the two themes of this perek. Rabbi Menachem Liebtag points out that the only other almond branch in Tanakh is the one that Aaron laid in the Mishkan after the Korach rebellion, when the people still did not recognize that he was the chosen leader. Moshe told all the princes to leave their staffs in the Mishkan, and when they returned, only Aaron's staff had bloomed and even sprouted almonds. Looking at the Makel Shakei, the almond branch, in this way shows a different relationship between the two images. The almond branch represents Yirmiyahu's chosenness, like his ancestor Aaron, despite the many detractors that will ultimately reject his leadership, and the Sir Nafuach, the boiling pot, represents Yirmiyahu's prophecy, the warning of upcoming destruction that he will have to tell. By showing Yirmiyahu these images, giving him encouragement, and then explaining that to him, God is continuing his earlier imagery. Hashem told Yirmiyahu that he was chosen in the womb, constructing an imagery of Hashem as Yirmiyahu's parent. Here, he encourages Yirmiyahu and teaches him how to explain a nevuah. This also fulfills the efficacy of what Hashem said earlier, "Behold, I will put my words in your mouth." By showing Yirmiyahu these prophetic images, God is supporting Yirmiyahu and telling him that he will not let him down. The parak ends with Hashem's promise to Yirmiyahu in verse 19 that he will make him into an ir mitzar, ulamud barzel, ulchomot nechoshet al kol haaretz, a fortified city, a tower of iron, and walls of copper against the whole land. This imagery encompasses the totality of Yirmiyahu's experience to come. God will make him strong and protect him. However, all of these objects are used in warfare. Fortified cities and walls of copper are battered by opposing armies. In addition to promising him protection, God is telling Yirmiyahu that he himself will be under siege. This is further clarified in the next pasuk, "V'nilchamu alecha, v'lo yachlu lach, ki itcha aninu u'mahashem lahatzilecha." They will fight against you, but they will not be able to prevail against you, because I, God, am with you to save you. There's a duality about God's promise of protection. Yirmiyahu will not be killed by the people, but he will be attacked. His prophecy will shine forth, but only after trials and difficulties. With this, we leave our reluctant and scared prophet with a vital mission, one that he wishes he did not have to undertake, but he is prepared to do what he must. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Zvi Yosef.